so beautiful, like an angel in disguise. But if you meet a friendly horse, will you communicate by more?
How will you speak to that?
What does the frog say? What the frog say?
Yeah, we do not recommend picking any of these songs for your next karaoke session. Welcome to WatchMojo.com, and today we're counting down our picks for the.
We asked kids what it took to be a dad. This is what they had to say.
A father is always present. I mean, what real father figure can you have if they're not there?
In order to be a good dad, you need to love your son, you need to put gas in your car so you don't break down in the middle of nowhere, and you need to make some breakfast. Yep.
I mean, just to maybe play like a board game with me, or to just stay home and play some video games with me. Just to do like that one little thing is what I really look forward to.
I'm not asking him to be a perfect dad, but he should try.
He's just a constant force in my life.
There's no other type of love like a dad's love because it's not comparable to anything else.
Take time to be a dad today. Call 877-4DAD-411 or visit fatherhood.gov. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
WMFO Medford, 91.5 FM. It is The Big Picture. Derek Gary with you until 9 o'clock tonight. 855-915-9636 is the telephone number. On the tell, Mikey D coming your way at 9 o'clock with everything you need to know about the Boston music scene. Don't forget, if you are on the tell, Mikey D fan, they got the bumper stickers and the pins, and Joel has just walked in here and bestowed upon me brand new. Brand spanking new On the Towel Mikey D pins, On the Towel Mikey D stickers, On the Towel Mikey D bumper stickers, the whole nine yards. So fancy, schnazzy, new On the Towel Mikey D stuff. Check out the show. They'll tell you maybe how you can get some of it. 855-915-9636. A lot of news in the pizza world over the last few days. John Schnatter, you know him as Papa John. You know him as the guy palling around with Peyton Manning on those pizza commercials on Sundays during football season. Maybe you know him as the guy behind the Papa Slam promotion taking place in Major League Baseball right now. John Schnatter, born with, we won't say a silver spoon in his mouth, but certainly born with a tin spoon in his mouth. Grew up middle class in Indiana, and grew up middle class around Louisville, and graduated college, didn't really have a lot of direction in life. His dad owned a bar, and Schnatter sold the muscle car that he'd had since high school, his favorite possession in the world, bought a pizza oven, stuck it in the back of the bar, started making pizza. Now there are thousands of Papa John's locations around the world. This, of course, is not why we're talking about John Schnatter. No, we're talking about John Schnatter because he used the N-word, ladies and gentlemen. He used the N-word, and this was reported in Forbes magazine. Here's what Forbes had to say, and I quote, "On the May call," and this is important, this is a very important detail, but this is how Forbes sets the whole thing up. "On the May call," which is with his crisis PR firm. They're not really a crisis PR firm. They're more of a public relations and marketing firm called Laundry Service. This is a company that is owned by a descendant. I don't know if she's a daughter or a granddaughter of Lou Wasserman. It was a big Casey Wasserman is her name. Lou Wasserman was a big Hollywood mogul. Casey Wasserman owns Laundry Service. And Papa John's has hired Laundry Service to teach John Schnatter how not to be dumb when he talks in public. "On the May call," this is from Forbes, "on the May call," and here's the thing, when you hire another company to work with you, full disclosure, I am in digital marketing. This is what I do for a living when I'm not getting paid here at WMFO. I have very deep relationships with my clients. All marketing agencies do. All PR firms do. We get access to all kinds of information that the public is not allowed to know about. For example, I may find out ahead of time that one of my clients is launching a new product. I may find out ahead of time that there is an acquisition in the works. Okay? I can't do anything with that information. If I do, I'm breaking the law, and I am breaking confidentiality with my client. Client confidentiality in our industry is part of what keeps our industry alive. If you go out and you hire a PR crisis firm, if you go out and hire a marketing firm to coach your executives on how to behave in public, they are performing the function of a crisis PR firm. And their discretion, their confidentiality is paramount. We go back to Forbes. "On the May call," this is with Laundry Service. This is a call with his PR firm, with their marketing firm. "There is, I'm willing to bet, somewhere in all of this, a non-disclosure agreement, a confidentiality agreement between the business and the agency. That's how our industry works." Maybe you're Casey Wasserman, you don't have to sign these things. I don't know. Maybe Casey Wasserman is that good. I don't think so. But what's normal in our industry is if I am having a call with my client and my client gives me confidential information, which is basically anything that my client says during the call, I will not disseminate that information any further than necessary. I may tell my coworkers who work on the account. I may tell my employers if it's something that I need additional resources for, or if it is something that potentially jeopardizes our relationship with the client. The client says, "We're firing you guys. I'm going to go tell my bosses that. I'm going to say, hey, they said they're firing us so that we can try and keep them as a client or let them go, whatever we decide to do. But I am not sharing that information with anybody unless it is absolutely necessary. As a rule of thumb, senior level people who need information on client calls between marketing agencies and businesses are all on the call. So I will have my social media person there. I'll have an account manager there. If we're talking about content, I will have a member of our content team there. If we're talking about buying a lot of advertising, I'll have members of my advertising team there. That way everyone hears the same thing at the same time and we can move forward efficiently. John Schnatter is on the phone in a training call with laundry service. Here's what Forbes has to say. On the May call, Schnatter was asked how he would distance himself from racist groups online. The reason he's being asked to do this, you may recall, is because during the NFL protests, when players were taking a knee, John Schnatter got on a conference call with investors and blamed the NFL's inability to deal with these protests for failing pizza sales. This was not a good look for John Schnatter or for Papa John's. There was immediate outrage from a lot of corners, rightfully so. There was also a sudden upsurge in support from white nationalist organizations, which Papa John's did not want. Papa John's basically had to come out and say, look, Nazis, stop buying our pizza. Not in as many words, but that's kind of where this went. So they're trying to keep Papa John, John Schnatter, from putting his foot in his mouth again. Schnatter was asked how he would distance himself from racist groups online. He responded by downplaying the significance of the NFL statement. Quote, Colonel Sanders called blacks N-word, end quote, Schnatter said, before complaining that Sanders never faced public backlash. Forbes continues. Schnatter also reflected on his early life in Indiana, where he said people used to drag African Americans from trucks until they died. He apparently intended for the remarks to convey his antipathy to racism, but multiple individuals on the call found them to be offensive, a source familiar with the matter said. After learning about the incident, laundry service owner Casey Wasserman moved to terminate the company's contract with Papa John's. So this is what he said. John Schnatter used the N-word. He said, Colonel Sanders called blacks the N-word. And then complained that Sanders never got any public backlash for it. That is not true. There is no evidence anywhere that Colonel Sanders ever used that word. Colonel Sanders used to call black people Negroes until he was corrected. And he was corrected at some point in the late 1960s. And they were like, you can't, we don't use that word anymore. Some black organization, United Negro College Fund, still uses that. There are still some organizations that use it. But coming out of the mouth of a Southern white person, not a good look. So Colonel Sanders knocked that off. Colonel Sanders, from what everyone has been able to determine, never said this. So who knows? Schnatter's confused or what have you. And then he talks about how when he grew up, they used to drag black people to their deaths, presumably outside his house. These are horrible things to say. These are horrible, unforgivable things to say. All right? If you want to be mad at this guy for saying these things, I get it. Yeah, I'm on board with that outrage. So this gets out in Forbes. On Friday, John Schnatter is on a radio show out in Louisville. And he said that he was pushed by the agency with whom the conference call was arranged. This is what he said, that he was pushed by the agency. So what they've done is they've called him in and they've said, look, you say a lot of stupid things. So we're going to do a crisis PR session. We're going to ask you questions and we want you to come up with like the worst things that you can possibly say. We want you to come up with the most racist, horrible things you can possibly say. Just do whatever pops into your mind. And we'll work through how you should respond to that. Instead of doing their job, laundry service, Casey Wasserman. They fire Papa John's as a client. And then Casey Wasserman runs and tells Forbes, or someone associated with laundry service runs and tells Forbes. Now, if you've been following me up to this point, I have made it very clear that in my industry, if I am on a conference call with a client, everything they say to me is confidential. They may give me material information. They may tell me about future strategy. They may tell me about people they don't like, competitors that they don't like, or people that they do like. They may talk about bad experiences they've had with other agencies. I've heard all manner of things. I haven't heard anything racist or homophobic. I think my clients, number one, aren't like that to begin with. And number two, I think anybody who would ever think of talking to me that way knows that I'm not going to put up with it. But those conversations are confidential. This is and one of the problems with this story is these media outlets who are saying, oh, he was on a conference call, and they are not qualifying what it was. John Schnatter was on a crisis management conference call where he was goaded into making racist statements. And the PR firm then turned around and ran to Forbes and told Forbes what he said. This is gross, gross negligence. This may be a legally actionable offense on the part of laundry service and Casey Wasserman or whoever it was that went running to Forbes and said, John Schnatter used the N-word. That's what they did. They went running to Forbes and John Schnatter used the N-word. If there is a confidentiality agreement in place, which, by the way, is pretty standard when you're dealing with a PR firm, when you're dealing with a marketing agency, if there is an NDA involved, John Schnatter has a lawsuit on his hands. At the very least, laundry service has breached a fundamental basic rule of the agency-client relationship, which is all calls, all conversations are confidential. We're not quite at the level of attorney-client privilege. We're not quite at the level of what you say in confession to clergy or doctor-patient confidentiality, but we're not that far away from those things either. If someone's breaking the law, we have an obligation to report. Other than that, what is said in the call stays in the call. And when you have a call with a client and you were trying to get them to say horrible things, and they turn around and say horrible things, and then you run to the media, you run to Forbes, which is barely a news outlet. I'm not surprised they went to Forbes. Someone with integrity at the Huffington Post must have said no if this wound up at Forbes. That's the only way that happens. You run to Forbes. John Schnatter used the N-word. Really? What? When did that happen? Oh, it was on a crisis management conference call. Okay. Yeah, we'll write that up. And everybody else in the media gets a hold of it. And they're like, John Schnatter used the N-word on a conference call. Yeah, a confidential conference call designed to train him how not to say stupid things in public. You understand that this, I don't think they went into this as a setup. I'm not going to go that far with this. But I am going to say this is an egregious violation of the way that agencies are supposed to represent their clients. This is unconscionable to someone in my industry that you would have a client, you'd put the client on a call, say the most racist thing you can think of, and then not only fire them after the call, but turn around and run to the media. Now, laundry service has gotten a bit of a comeuppance from this. They laid off 10% of their workforce because they no longer have the Papa John's contract. That, to me, is a beginning. And here's where I will interject some opinion on this. I would not do business with this company. I would not allow this company to represent me in a million years. And any business that is currently working with laundry service ought to get out of there right now. Because if they'll do this to one client, they'll do this to other clients. Who knows what they're going to run to Forbes with next? If you don't want all of your corporate secrets being spilled all over the place, if you don't want leaks damaging your business, and this one, by the way, sunk Papa John's stock 11% when it came out. If you don't want that to happen to your company, don't work with laundry service. Don't work with Casey Wasserman. It may not be her. She may not be the one that ran to Forbes. Someone ran to Forbes. The only people who were on this call were people from Papa John's and people from laundry service. We know Papa John's didn't leak this. So it had to be someone from laundry service. Not a good look. Not the way that an agency is supposed to behave. A complete violation of client privilege, which resulted in Papa John resigning from the board of directors under intense pressure from the other directors. They have since tried to remove him from the advertising. He has been removed from the University of Louisville's board of directors. They have taken the Papa John's name off the Louisville Stadium because a marketing agency, whose job it is, by the way, to help a company grow, to help a company improve its public perception, to help a company improve its business, went and told Forbes what was said during a call. I don't think Papa John's hired laundry service to sink their business, but that's the net result of this. Another reason why I would not recommend working with laundry service. And I can tell you, as somebody who has been involved in crisis PR, I have never heard statements like this. But if I heard statements like this, if I were to go to client into saying something like this, I would expect something like this. And I'd say, okay, let's forget that those words ever left your mouth. And let's find a more constructive way of saying what you want to say. In the meantime, John Schnatter has now sent a letter to the board of directors saying that he made a mistake when he agreed to step down. Called out the fact that these reports about him have been mischaracterized. This was not the way the media has made it sound, depending on who you read. Forbes kind of got it right, but Forbes missed the biggest part of this whole thing, which is you shouldn't be reporting on this because it's a confidential conversation between a client and their PR firm. They missed that part of it, but that's Forbes these days. Other news outlets just said, oh, he said it on a conference call. And if somebody says he said it on a conference call, what comes to your mind? Are you thinking a confidential call between a marketing company, a crisis PR firm, and a client? No. You're thinking the guy's on the phone with a bunch of people. He's talking to investors, or he's talking to customers, or he's talking to somebody. You're not thinking that it is a training session to teach you how not to say bad things, where you have been encouraged to say bad things. So he has now sent a letter to the board. And in this letter to the board, John Schnatter had this to say, quote, the board asked me to step down as chairman without apparently doing any investigation. I agreed, though today I believe it was a mistake to do so. I have checked with corporate governance experts who tell me that it was not a proper action by the board. John Schnatter is still on the board of Papa John's. They can't get rid of him from the board. He is a 51% shareholder in the company. So he's going to retain a seat on the board pretty much no matter what. He did step down as CEO after the NFL comments last year. Whether or not they can remove him as chairman has to do with the rules that govern the behavior of the board. They may or they may not. And John Schnatter is very likely to wind up back in his position as chairman of the board. Perhaps a new board, because perhaps a lot of people will step down. But in his letter to the board, Schnatter accused the company of lacking the ability to, quote, handle a crisis based on misinformation, end quote. I agree with Mr. Schnatter on that point. I do not agree, and I cannot defend anything that he said in that call. Other than to say, if somebody were to put me in that situation and say, I want you to say the most horrible things you can possibly say, there will be probably an endless stream of expletives that come out of my mouth that I can never use on the air because the FCC doesn't appreciate that. But there will never be racist language. There will never be homophobic language. That's not That's not what I ever used to get a point across. I was one of those kids that grew up in the 1980s and used the word gay to describe everything. We don't do that anymore, okay? It was bad then. We didn't think about it. We've grown up. But other than that, I'm not somebody who uses racist or homophobic language or talks about things in those terms. Even if somebody goaded me into it, it's hard for me to imagine myself saying the things that John Schnatter said. Maybe this speaks to John Schnatter's character. I don't know. I know that people around him have said he's the least like racist guy I've ever met. It's usually bad when somebody says that, by the way. And we all kind of know that. But a number of people have come out in defense of his character and said, look, this guy, he's not a racist. He's not a white supremacist. He's not a problem. He got caught by this marketing agency. It's laundry service, okay? Having a phone call to teach him not to say bad things to the media. Private phone call. Potentially covered by a confidentiality agreement. They don't like what he says. So somebody goes running to Forbes. If you can't do your job, if you don't want to do your job the right way, go find another job. That's my advice to whoever leaked this to Forbes. You have committed a gross, gross violation of industry standards. That is not the way the industry works. That is not the way the industry is meant to work. John Schnatter, should he be called out? If John Schnatter had made these comments in a public forum, in a public conference call, absolutely, I'm on board. Take him down. This guy's out of control. Anybody who's going to say something like that in public, no. That is a non-starter for me. But when you're on a conference call with your crisis PR firm and they've told you, they're pushing you, say the most racist things you can think of, and then you turn around and run to the media, come on. Not the way the industry works. So I'm not working with laundry service. If I had any clients who were working with laundry service, I'd be telling them to run the other way right now, because the thing that I would worry about isn't necessarily what happened here with John Schnatter. The thing that I would worry about is what's going to happen next. What other bit of information are they going to leak and harm one of their clients? It's not normal. It may be normal, and I hate to blame everything on millennials. I really do. I really do. But as someone in the industry, as somebody who's been involved in media for many, many years, I do see a fair amount of this among millennials, where they will get so upset about something that they have to run and tell somebody. They either have to run and post it on social media, or they have to run and tell the press. This person is mean. This person says bad things. This person looks at me funny. This person used the N-word. As if that has never happened before in the history of American business or in an American workplace. If we're talking about sexual assault, I mean, if somebody's grabbing you and touching you and doing, that's one thing, all right? Yes, go report that. Go tell people about that. But there's a lot of stuff that happens. It gets blown out of all proportion because millennials can't handle it. Because they hear someone use the N-word and it's like, I got to go run and tell somebody I heard the N-word. Believe me, I have dealt with my share of racists in the 20 plus years that I've been working. The 20 plus years since I got out of college. I've dealt with my share of racists. And it always goes the same way. You get one opportunity to say something racially motivated to me, and then I will never speak to you again. Because up until you say that, I am going to give you the benefit of the doubt and assume that you're a reasonable person. As soon as you say something like that to me, done, gone, over. I have no use for you. And I think that's a reasonable position to take. But I'm not going to turn around and go run to a supervisor and be like, he said something racist. I'm not going to go to the news. I'm not going to call up Forbes. Really, if you're calling up Forbes in the first place with your story, you're scraping the bottom of the barrel. And I assume the next call that you make after Forbes is probably Jezebel or some other part of Gizmodo Media Group. WMFO Medford. 91.5 FM on Tell Mikey D coming your way in about, well, in exactly 30 minutes and 28 seconds. They will be here with everything you need to know about the Boston music scene. Schnatter, if you want to hate what he said, you can hate what he said. Understand the circumstances of what he said. Understand that client confidentiality was violated when someone ran to Forbes and told him about what he said. And then ask yourself if he deserves everything that he's getting as a result of this. I will point out that mediocre Milwaukee reliever, you might have caught this during the All-Star game last night. This was fun. Mediocre Milwaukee reliever who got lit up for a bunch of home runs, Josh Hader, probably the American League's best friend right now. A bunch of his tweets from high school came out yesterday during the game. And this spread so fast that his family, who were all wearing Josh Hader jerseys in the stands, were actually given new jerseys without his name on them because they were afraid someone might hurt them. This is stuff that he wrote when he was in high school. And some of it, you know, I don't know. I will say this. When I was a high school student back in the 1980s, we didn't talk like this. And we certainly didn't write things like this. You know, we may have drawn anarchy symbols on everything. We may have been F the man and F authority and all that sort of stuff. But some of the things that he tweeted, I hate gay people is one of his tweets. KKK is one of his tweets. White power LOL is one of his tweets. And that's just the stuff that I can say. This is horrid. This is inexcusable. This is Josh Hader in high school. The Major League Baseball has decided that sensitivity training is the appropriate response for this. He's not been removed from Milwaukee. He's not been suspended. He has not been erased from America's public consciousness as John Schnatter has. Why? Because he's a kid who made a mistake. He's grown up. He's learned from it. I don't know. I'm more inclined to give John Schnatter the benefit of the doubt than Josh Hader, because John Schnatter said a couple of things in a very controlled environment for a specific reason. Josh Hader said all this stuff because he was bored. So, you know, yes, he's immature. Yes, he's young. But you know what? I knew a lot of people in the 1980s who were immature and young and bored. And we never said things like this. Maybe because we didn't have social media. Maybe that's it. I don't know. But at the very least, maybe we can get John Schnatter some sensitivity training, get him his job at Papa John's back, and maybe he can get back to actually making good pizza, which is the real reason their sales are down. In other national news, the Stephen Paddock assault on the Route 91 Harvest Festival has taken a stunning turn. An absolutely stunning, stunning turn. MGM Resorts, they own the Mandalay Bay, and they were also owned the spot where the concert took place, where the Route 91 Harvest Festival was taking place. MGM Resorts announced yesterday, or actually, this was reported yesterday. This happened a while ago. MGM Resorts International, owner of the Mandalay Bay and the site where 58 people were killed and hundreds were hurt, has sued the victims and their families. MGM Resorts has sued the victims of Stephen Paddock. Let that sink in for a second. Stephen Paddock checks into an MGM hotel with 24 assault rifles, smashes out the windows in his two adjoining suites, which he's been occupying for several days, forces some doors closed, sets up cameras out in the hall, does all this different stuff, proceeds to murder 58 people and wound hundreds more, at a concert, an outdoor concert outside of his hotel, which he has meticulously planned out. He's planned all of this out. We still don't know why Stephen Paddock did any of this, but we know that he planned it, and we know that it was carefully executed. He checks into their hotel. They let him check in. They let him get a second suite. They let him bring in all these guns. Nobody asks any questions about all this baggage that's going up to his room. Stephen Paddock kills 58 people, wounds hundreds more. MGM sues them. MGM sues the victims. Why? MGM is attempting to get these cases moved out of state court into federal court. And they are doing it using some legislation that was passed in the wake of the 2001 attacks on the World Trade Center. There were a number of rules passed after 2001. One of those bills set up the Department of Homeland Security. Another one of those bills says that if an act of terrorism is committed and you have security measures in place that are approved by the Department of Homeland Security, you cannot be sued in a state court. You can only be sued in a federal court. This is what MGM is doing. MGM's argument is that because they hired CSC, if you've been to a concert or a football game at Gillette Stadium, if you've been to a concert at Fenway Park, if you've been to a concert at Boston Garden, you've seen CSC. They're the guys in the Day-Glow jackets with the reflective stripe on them and CSC services on the back. They're security. MGM maintains that because they hired CSC as security for the Route 91 Harvest Festival, that they are immune from prosecution at the state level because CSC is approved by the Department of Homeland Security. This is their argument. We hired security guys that DHS says are okay. Therefore, you can't sue us in a state court. I don't recall CSC putting up like bulletproof tents over the Route 91 Harvest Festival. I don't recall CSC doing anything to stop Mr. Paddock from bringing all those guns into the hotel or breaking out the windows of the hotel or shooting all those people or any of the above. But because we hired CSC, you can't sue us in state courts. Some lawyer at MGM is going to get a big, fat, fat bonus if this goes through. This is extremely unlikely to go through. One attorney has accused them of judge shopping, and I think that's charitable. I think that's a kind way to describe what is going on here. If you would like to hear that stream of expletives that I discussed earlier, This is the kind of story that will get that stream of expletives out of me, and that's how MGM ought to be described in this. Why do you want to move this from a state court to a federal court? Well, there's two simple reasons for that. Number one, if you can consolidate everything in a federal court, it makes it easier for you to deal with the legislation or for you to deal with the case. You got a class action suit in a federal court. It is one judge or one jury, one hearing, one set of lawyers. Everything gets wrapped up at once. As opposed to right now where they're dealing with some cases are in California, some cases are in Nevada. So you save on some legal expenses. And you get a single verdict and everybody walks away. The other reason, the more sinister reason, why you would want to move this to a federal court, why an attorney is rightfully calling this judge shopping, is because the federal courts in the United States are notoriously kinder to big corporations than the state courts are. There are exceptions to this rule. State by state, the rules on the kind of settlements that you can get and the attitudes of juries toward big businesses and toward negligence and toward the legal system varies quite a bit. Even within a state, you can get huge variations in how juries will approach certain cases. In some states, juries love civil attorneys. Juries love personal injury lawyers. They believe them. They have confidence in them. They listen to the stories about how people were injured or killed, and sympathy takes over, and they award piles of money. In other states, juries look at personal injury lawyers, and they say, you're an ambulance chaser, you're a snake oil salesman, I hate you, I hate your client, I hate everything, you get nothing. But as a rule, and certainly if we're talking about California, Nevada might be arguable whether a casino owner is going to get preferential treatment from a judge. In California, they're not, because California has no interest in that in the same way that Nevada has an interest in that. So MGM ultimately is trying to limit what they have to pay. MGM is going to have to pay. That's kind of inevitable. And the fact that they have a lawyer who is going out and citing obscure, not totally obscure, but coming up with an obscure interpretation at the very least of a piece of legislation passed after 9/11 to protect people from a mass shooter tells you that MGM Resorts is worried about their liability. No one has described this as an act of terrorism, by the way. And that is the first major obstacle that MGM faces in trying to get a federal judge to vacate the state cases. Now, MGM has come out and said, no, we're doing this for the victims. This is their right. We're doing this for the victims. We are trying to streamline the process by which the victims can be compensated for what happened. Let me tell you a little bit about what happens after an incident like this. Because they all follow the same playbook. And if you read about what happens after a plane crash, if you read about what happens after an automobile accident, after a building collapse or a hotel fire or anything like that, you see the same story over and over again. And usually you hear about it in plane crashes more often than anything else, because people tend to focus in more closely on plane crashes. They get a little more coverage. Here's what happens. Stephen Paddock kills 58, wounds hundreds, firing from his hotel room in the MGM Resorts-owned Mandalay Bay at a concert taking place on MGM Resorts-owned property. Almost before the dust has settled, MGM's insurance companies have moved in. And they are figuring out, all right, who was hurt? Who do we have to contact? And they're going to go to every one of these families, people who are injured or the survivors of people who were killed, and they're going to offer settlement. And they're going to say, we will give you $1 million if you will waive all of your future legal claims against MGM Resorts. And the hope is, and the game is, if the offer is good enough to be accepted, but not big enough to be truly costly to the company, that's a win. That's how this game is played. This is what happens after a major event like this. The insurance companies are going to come in and try and lowball settlements. The families and the victims in this particular case don't seem to be taking a lot of those settlement offers. MGM is now pursuing other remedies because they know they are on the hook for a significant amount of liability. Somebody has done the math on this. And somebody has come to the conclusion that it is better for MGM Resorts to risk the bad PR of suing the victims of the worst gun attack in United States history, which took place from an MGM Resorts hotel room directed at an MGM Resorts owned concert venue. They have decided it is better to risk the bad PR of suing the victims than it is to allow the state cases to go forward. That suggests to me that we are talking liability somewhere in the range of $1 billion. I don't know the exact financials of MGM Resorts. I didn't have time to look that up before this. If I'd had that time, I could probably put a decent number in front of you that would tell you what their exposure is in the Stephen Paddock case. So they are now pulling out all the stops. They have now resorted to desperate measures. And to hell with what anybody in the public thinks, to hell with what the families think, this is, I don't know if this is an existential crisis for MGM. It would seem unusual to me if their liability is so high that MGM would cease to exist, that MGM would cease to operate. It's one of the biggest hotel, resort, and casino operators in the world. They can get a line of credit from the bank. But clearly it's enough money that they are willing to risk the horrid, horrid, terrible, unbelievable optics of suing the victims to try and get this move to federal court. And of course you have the PR spin on it. Well, you know, no. We're trying to streamline things. We're trying to make things easier for the victims by getting all this consolidated in a federal court. No, you're not. I don't think I believe that. I don't think anyone within MGM believes that. I think you're trying to find a way to eliminate the possibility that you're going to wind up with these cases in state courts that will hand out far more generous settlements to those who died and to those who were hurt than a federal court, which is more likely to come up with some sort of equitable settlement that applies to everybody, that is much simpler for MGM Resorts to manage. Stunning to me that anyone would even think of doing something like this. And so stunning that you've got to ask, how bad is it? How scary is the liability that you've sent your lawyers out to try and get these cases consolidated? Because it's not like you're talking about cases spread out over, you know, 17 or 18 states. It's California and Nevada and federal. So you might wind up in three courts. You're trying to get it down to one. But you're being accused of judge shopping, and you're rightfully being accused of judge shopping because you were trying to get it into the court that will give you the most favorable terms. That tells me that there is real concern, genuine concern within MGM Resorts, not only for the fact that they will be found responsible for this, but also that they will be dealing with some very, very significant liability from this. This will play out, and the consensus among the legal experts who have been asked online seems to be that MGM is grasping at straws with this, that there is very little chance that they're going to be able to move this into a federal court, partly because no one has called this an act of terrorism yet. We don't have a motive. Stephen Paddock is an American citizen. Who was not known to be affiliated with any terrorist organizations, did not seem to have any association with terrorist organizations, did not make terroristic statements online. We don't know why he did this. Stephen Paddock may not know why he did this. He certainly has not left behind any kind of evidence to this point that would tell us this is an act of terrorism. And to qualify as an act of terrorism, it generally has to be something done for political reasons. And political reasons could include, you know, I think I'm the most important person in the world and I should be president. You can make an argument that that's a political reason. You can make a more clear argument if he comes in and says, you know what, I support Bernie Sanders. And Bernie's not running for president, so I'm going to shoot everybody. That would more clearly be seen as an act of terrorism. The FBI hasn't said that yet. Nevada police haven't said that yet. Las Vegas police haven't said that yet. We don't know why he did what he did. So based on that alone, MGM is going to have a hard time getting this into a federal court. Beyond that, you have this insane claim that they have made that this 2002 law should apply to them because they hired security guards who are Department of Homeland Security approved, and that somehow waives their liability from being sued in a state court. That's insane. because even if you gave them the waiver for the concert venue, even if you said, okay, you know what, the site of the Harvest Festival, the Route 91 Harvest Festival, you had Department of Homeland Security approved guys there. All right, we'll waive your liability for that location. You still let Stephen Paddock bring 24 assault rifles, some equipped with bump stocks, into his hotel room from where he shot at everybody. And it's a little bit like saying, hey, you know what? I just got all these great, you know, Department of Homeland Security approved locks and put them all over my house. And so now nobody can get into my house. But you take the roof off the house and somebody comes in through the roof because there's no roof there. Not going to work. 855-915-9636. Bad luck for MGM Resorts. I wouldn't blame anybody who basically said, I am not staying with MGM Resorts anymore. The optics on this are atrocious. And I can tell you that if they're doing this, it's because they're scared. It's because they're scared of what their liability is going to be. And if you think this is a poor way for a company to react to that, I'm not going to tell you that you should go stay there. I'm not going to tell you you shouldn't go stay there. Not a good look. Not a good look at all. They're that scared that they decided they would take this PR hit, that they would take this risk and look this bad in front of the American people by suing the victims. So we'll see how this plays out. On the Town, Mikey D coming your way in less than 10 minutes. This is On the Town. On the Town, Mikey D is coming your way in less than 10 minutes. This is The Big Picture. I'm Derek Gary. When we come back, my favorite thing from the past week and the strangest things from the past week here on WMFO Medford.
Book he reads is on the floor. No word in the English language is less convincing than probably.
Are you sure we should get matching tattoos on our first date?
Sure. We'll probably stay together.
Probably? It's been 23 minutes since I ate. I can probably swim.
You should wait 30 minutes.
Okay, now tell me what to do. Cannonball! Cramp! Oh, I have a cramp.
I can probably hit the green from here.
Probably.
Can I get a mulligan?
Ready to go?
Hey, are you sure you're okay to drive?
Yeah, I'm pretty sober. Yeah, I'm probably okay.
Probably okay isn't okay, especially when it comes to drinking and driving. If you're drinking, call a cab, a car, or a friend. Buzz driving is drunk driving. A message brought to you by NHTSA and the Ad Council.
Everything is awesome. Everything is cool when you're part of a team. Everything is awesome when we're living our dream. Everything is better when we stick together. Side by side, you and I gonna win forever. Let's party forever. We're the same, I'm like you, you're like me. We're all working in harmony.
From Medford 91.5 FM, it is The Big Picture. Derek Gary with you for until 9 o'clock. On the Tell, Mikey D coming up next with everything you need to know about the Boston music scene. As we close out the show every week, it is time for What's Hot, favorite thing from the past week, and this was just announced today. Oh boy, is this good. If you like James Bond movies, and of course you do, if you like Goldfinger, has Lego got something for you? This is the Lego creator James Bond Aston Martin DB5, which is available right now if you are a Lego VIP. If you are not, you will have to wait until August 1st to get this. This is the Aston Martin DB5 as seen in Goldfinger. So not only is it as faithful a reproduction of the car as you're going to get in Lego, but it also has all of those great features from Goldfinger, including the rotating license plate on the front, including the pop-out machine guns under the headlights, and including the ejector seat. Yes, this has a working ejector seat. This is basically the dream come true for James Bond, Goldfinger fans, and Lego fans. And this is another example of just a cool, adult-oriented gift that you can get from Lego. As I said, it is available right now if you're a Lego VIP. If you are not a Lego VIP, you'll be able to purchase one on August 1st. These tend not to sell out immediately, so you don't have to rush out in a buying frenzy. But you are going to have to bring $150 if you want to take one home. If you know somebody who's a big James Bond fan or a big Lego fan, trust me, this one's a no-brainer. Time now for That's the Thing That Happened, the strangest story of the past week. Florida. Arrest is not a game or a TV show. 53-year-old Rudolph Grant apparently has not learned this. Police were called to a home in Sebastian, Florida, where a man was reportedly chasing a woman while waving a golf club. When police arrived, they found Grant reeking of alcohol and screaming in front of the residents. Grant first tried to walk away from the cops, then struggled with an officer trying to arrest him, forcing police to use double-locked restraints. As Grant was loaded into a patrol car, he looked at an officer and said, quote, "I really enjoyed resisting. It was like being on Live PD," end quote. Live PD being an A&E show similar to Fox's Cops. Grant got to pay a $1,000 bond for his enjoyable experience and will face charges of resisting arrest and disorderly conduct. I suspect he'll compare his trial to Judge Judy. "I really enjoyed resisting arrest," said only one person ever. And he's in Florida. That is all the time that we have for this week. Programming note for next week, The Big Picture will not be here. I'm going to be filling in for Chris Earle. I'm going to be taking over